Hello and welcome to the Freightfine podcast, your source for all things freight transportation. I'm Chris Kaplis, Chief Scientist at DAT Freight and Analytics, and today I'm lucky to be joined by Roy Anany, Director of Transportation at Chainalytics. Now, I asked Roy to join me because I wanted to discuss recent trends in transportation management systems, or TMSs, and no one knows more about TMSs than Roy. He's been designing and developing, implementing and integrating TMSs for 25 years. And with the growing importance of digitalization and the increasingly dynamic nature of transportation markets, the TMS is more important than ever. So this is an opportunity to listen to an expert on how TMSs have evolved and where they're heading to. So following my conversation with Roy, I'll be joined by Dr. Enam Ayoub to discuss the truckload market update. So let's get started. Welcome to Freightfine Podcast, Roy.
Thanks, Chris. Good to be here.
Yeah, I've been excited to get you on the show because something that's been coming up in a topic when we talk to all the shippers in the FMIC is their TMS. And it seems like they all either love their TMS, hate their TMS, but across the board, they're having to modify their TMSs, their transportation management systems, to be able to better procure transportation and handle dynamic changes. So when I was thinking about who I could get to come to talk about TMSs, you're the first person that popped in my mind because you're Mr. TMS. You've done more implementations probably than anyone I know. So I'm excited to have you on the show. And my first question is, you know, can you give some background? How have TMSs evolved over the last, 10, 20 years, and especially in the last few years? What do you think?
Well, I think there are a couple major trends that are worth calling out here. One of them is certainly the migration to the cloud. When I started in this TMS business 25 years ago, the cloud was what you sometimes saw in the sky, and that was it. The default has become to have a cloud implementation. And what that generally means is that things are a little easier than they used to be. I mean, just because something's cloud-based doesn't mean it comes easily. But that would be one observation. The other observation, and maybe a more interesting one, is that in the early days, a TMS was kind of just integrated or not very well integrated portion of a workflow. So you've got a bunch of orders from your ERP system and package them up in some form or another and kind of threw them over the wall into the TMS, where the TMS did what it normally does. Consolidation and optimization, find carriers, tender loads, and so on. And then toward the end of the process would send back some information to an ERP system. And the noticeable change from those early days is now the TMS is a sort of an active participant in a workflow that's not anywhere near as linear as it used to be. So there are all kinds of places in that workflow where you might want to call out to some sort of GPS tracking device and understand where my load is.
Right.
And maybe I want to initiate some kind of recovery workflow if that's necessary. Or maybe I want to call out to a rate repository that's hosted by somebody else. And not just rely on copies of contracts that I've one time put into my TMS. So there's a lot more integration with other subsystems as part of a more integrated ecosystem. So I think that's what is to be expected. I mean, the world is getting more and more integrated in a number of ways, and that shows up in the way that the TMS needs to position itself.
Going back to cloud, I back in the 90s, I was part of a company that had an ASP. Do you remember those? application service provider, and they were looked down upon because they were considered lightweight when it was web-based for that. But cloud's gotten a lot better. But so if I have a cloud implementation, is it usually multi-tenant or is it a separate instance that just happened to be on a server in the cloud? Which is more dominant?
I think the I'm not sure if I know the numbers. They're both common. You have Oracle or JDA solutions that JDA. Dating myself now.
Yeah, I know. At least you didn't call it. You didn't call it I2 and Manugistics, so you get a point there.
Right.
But Blue Yonder.
But I mean, those solutions, certainly have configurations that are sort of single instance and not sharing their data with others, as compared to maybe a BlueJay where there's one instance that's that you ship that we do share with other shippers. And I think I'm not sure there's ever going to be a dominant version of that. There's still some concerns from a lot of bigger corporations around how secure is my data?
Right.
Back in the olden days, I think there were genuine concerns about security and sort of just data governance that have somewhat got addressed, but there's still ongoing concerns around data in some companies.
Sure.
Maybe just for historical reasons, don't want to share their data space with anybody, even if it's pretty darn secure.
Yeah. So let me ask a question. You mentioned for cloud computing that's made some things easier. So where have the efficiencies come by cloud computing? Is it the implementation time is shorter, the connection time to carriers, processing? Where have you seen the biggest benefit or the savings here?
Well, I think there is certainly an element of the implementation time that is shorter, just because you don't have to go out and source hardware and put the pieces all together. Back in the olden days, you might have to set up a database environment and
right.
buy servers and configure communications in some cases to third party vans and other trading partners.
Mm-hmm.
That kind of goes away because the cloud providers have done this so often that it's either comes for free because they already have some existing capacity in their on their application servers or database servers,
right.
or they're so good at it that you can spin up an environment in a matter of weeks instead of what used to be several months just before you even get started. And then I think the other thing that's true is that for many of the implementations, there's more of, I won't call it a one-size-fits-all, but there are sort of templated implementations that you can leverage. And
okay.
Your mileage may vary. It kind of depends on how vanilla you can be in
right.
your implementation. And if you're able to get by with a fairly out-of-the-box vanilla type of environment, then you should certainly expect an implementation time that is in several weeks versus several months. Or
interesting. So if you do a vanilla implementation, it used to be hard with the ASP to modify that. Everyone had to move in lockstep. Is it now easier to modify that? If I come in as vanilla, can I start adding things to that over time? Is it easier to modify?
It can be, although there's no silver bullets here. And what mm-hmm. has always happened is that the bigger the shipper, the more unique they are. And
right.
It's hard to convince somebody to go vanilla. And if you're in an environment where you're sharing the code base with a bunch of other shippers, it can be difficult unless the solution itself is architected with extensibility in mind. This is an area where company like Mercurygate, I think, has done some good things. Allowed companies to sort of extend the capabilities of the system without throwing the baby out with the bathwater, so to speak. But there's always a risk, and you know, I think what it boils down to is to have some kind of guidance when you're doing your initial implementation, so that you don't paint yourself into a corner with customizations that may not survive upgrades or may just prevent you from taking advantage of some of the newer capabilities that subsequent versions will offer you.
Got it. So when we talk about truckload transportation, which we're mainly focused on, not LTL as much, but for truckload, you can see it falling into three big buckets. Stuff that goes dedicated, if you have a dedicated or private fleet. Stuff that goes under contract rates, however they're established. And then what we call dynamic, whether it's spot, load board, something else, but it's more of a one-off shipment. Let's talk with dedicated, because it used to be TMSs would only deal with that contract, that middle ground. Have you seen TMSs now be able to handle both one-way, over-the-road, for-hire contract rates as well as dedicated or private fleet? Have you seen that? Is that more common to be handled by TMSs these days?
Yeah, I think so. And there's varying degrees to which a TMS that grew up supporting contract-type truckload moves to extend into the dedicated area. In a case where you have dedicated and contract carriers in the mix, what typically happens is that you price the dedicated lanes in a way that might be artificially low, but gives them first right of refusal, so to speak, in their service area, and that part can work. In the case where you have just a dedicated fleet, really you're maybe not doing so much. It almost becomes more of a carrier type solution than a ship.
Right,
one.
Right.
And that's where I think there's still some differentiation in the marketplace between who can, who does that well versus who is just trying to make something work.
Right, right.
The difference is being things like, do you expect your TMS to understand, your driver hours and how many hours for the week each driver has, and do you worry about some of the other sort of back office type things?
Right.
To doing that. And classic TMSs, the OTMs and the Blue Yonders, gradually try to grow into that as opposed to some of the other TMSs like TMW, which is now part of the Trimble world, or McLeod, that kind of grew up as a more of a carrier TMS. And, a lot of the dedicated providers run those solutions under to manage their day-to-day. And, I'm not sure there is a super strong solution in the marketplace that does both well.
Yeah. Okay. What about the other end? So we talk about dedicated, and most TMSs will handle the one-way, contract stuff, usually through a waterfall. How have you seen access to dynamic or spot transactions? How has that changed, or has it?
Yeah, I think it has, and I think it's fair to say that most of the major TMSs, the ones that you see on the Gartner reports, acknowledge and interface to some sort of one or more of the digital freight markets. So they can get represented just as another carrier that typically ends up, is often positioned toward the bottom of the route guide. So you try your preferred contract carriers, one or more of them, and then move into the digital freight market or the spot market as required.
Right.
I don't see a lot of places where those two options were kind of the first thing that you try, although it can certainly be configured that way. But I guess under the heading of what's new in the TMS world is that easier spot market workflows and connections to digital freight markets are are becoming more and more common. And I think it's probably fair to say that if you hope to make it onto the Gartner chart in the right corner, you need to be able to do that.
No, that makes sense.
At least in North America. Because one other noteworthy thing is on the Gartner charts, there are a few European providers on the most recent one that didn't used to be there. And I don't think that's quite the same in the EU and Eastern Europe to worry about that.
Okay. One of the problems that I've heard with shippers that use some kind of auto tender feature, whether it goes, maybe it's a new lane or something as a surge volumes coming on where it'll go to a digital freight broker, is that sometimes there's no ceiling on the rate. Have you seen, and they are shocked at how much they have to pay if it just goes auto tender automatically. Have you seen ways where people can put guardrails around that, or have other TMSs or shippers have guarded against that, where you have obscenely high rates?
I haven't seen that in all of the TMSs, although I know that some of them do provide the guardrails like that. And this is another area where I think some of the workflows that are related to this are evolving, and that gives a bit of an advantage to company to the TMS providers that can extend existing workflows around that. But to varying degrees, I think most of the TMS providers have some kind of capability to limit that.
Yeah. No, that's because what one shipper that we've talked to. What they do is they tie it to the DAT rate, the published rate, and that they give a percentage window for that lane that they're willing to go above without any question. And I'm curious if that's more common, even with a DAT index or some other index. Are you seeing indexes used within TMSs in this manner or some other manner?
Yeah, I have seen that. In fact, one of the implementations I recently was involved with, they had a rule that if a spot quote came back within X percent of the DAT rate, that it would just be accepted and moved on. So mm-hmm. there are, that would be one example of a guardrail that was in place there.
Yeah. So let's talk about one of the areas that has always been a pain, and that's the connection to carriers. Traditionally, and I think this is still the case, the dominant form of communication from shipper to carrier, for large shippers anyway, is EDI. So have you seen this changing? Has EDI gotten better? Have you seen more or different types of communication like APIs coming in? What are your thoughts on that, the improvement of shipper to carrier communications?
Well, I guess I kind of classify the shipper carrier communications into maybe two broad camps. One would be the communication that is sort of larger volume, doesn't have to be real time, where EDI, I think, has been a good solution and continues to be. And this is relevant to receiving loads, tendering loads, and paying for them with invoicing on the back end. I think. There's still some onboarding challenges, and it would be nice. Maybe it gets a little easier to onboard carriers that have been communicating with EDI for years, but it never seems to be free. I mean, you wish it was. but I think that kind of communication is likely to be with us for a long time. But there's maybe another kind of communication that is more real time or near real time, especially related to status updates and geopositioning, and that's a place where the EDI 214 status message is a solution, but not the best one, and that's where I think the API approach, where you can send a message and get a response back essentially immediately, that's where there's I think, a place for APIs in the world. I mean, there are other there's rate quote APIs too that are similarly useful and useful because they return an answer very quickly. And I guess the other thing is that there's, I won't say zero, because there is work to make those communications work, but it's not maybe not quite as difficult or time consuming to establish those kinds of communications with many of the carriers. The mom and pops still suffer, be challenged in all scenarios.
Have you seen any shippers that go 100% API to their carriers, or a majority API versus EDI? Because I think every carrier of size can handle API for some functionality, right?
I think EDI still is from just a volume of trend. It's a more efficient way to deal with large volumes of shipments. And certainly if the response doesn't have to be super quick, the response for a lot of shippers and a lot of carriers is, that thing's not broke. So let's not fix it.
Let's not fix it. Got it. Okay. So are APIs easier to customize though? Because it seems like the joke with the EDI standards is that they're great because everyone has their own standard, right? There's nothing is identical. APIs make that even more flexible, right? Is that a good thing or is that a bad thing?
Yeah, I don't know. I think in theory it's a good thing, but back to the. Every time you customize an API, then you need to have a level of synchronization with the other people that you're exchanging those messages with. And roughly speaking, every time you do that, then you may end up tying yourself to a specific carrier longer than you need to, or otherwise limit your flexibility in the future. So I think it's again one of these implementation decisions that you need to make so that you don't end up doing something because you're different and pay for it later on.
Got it. Well, let's start talking about TMSs. And the first question is, there's been a lot of consolidation in the TMS space. BlueJay came from Lean Logistics. OTM was actually the old G-Log, right? Remember that? And then Blue Yonder, of course, was GDA, which was I2, and then Manugistics coming together, cats and dogs and all that kind of stuff. Do you think the consolidation is a good thing or a bad thing?
In some ways, I would say it's a thing.
Well, you're so Canadian. That's
I think some of it is to be expected. I think in a few cases, you can see the consolidated entity, being better than the sum of the parts. Sometimes it's done just for typical business growth reasons because it's hard to organically grow a TMS as quickly as you can through acquisition. Mm-hmm. It's interesting. I looked recently at the Gartner Magic Quadrant from 2007. And just counted the number of players that were on that chart. And memory serves, I think there were 13, maybe 14.
Wow.
By way of contrast, sometime in 2015, there was down to 9.
Mm-hmm.
And then the most recent one in 2021, we're back to 15. It was the highest it's ever been. So in some ways, some of the changes there were the result of acquisitions, consolidations. Sometimes some of the companies that were players 15 years ago are too small to make the cut and don't show up. And then there's some geographic new players from Europe. But in some ways, I think it's just part of the evolution of players come, players go, players get merged. I think I was wondering whether or not 10 years from now the Magic Quadrant will have 3 players in there instead of
that's the question.
And I'm not sure I would see that happening. And I think the top of the market with the Oracle and the Blue Yonders and the SAPs are certainly appealing to the big shippers. And there will be, I think the big shipper market is maybe if not fully saturated, there's not a lot of growth there. The growth in the market has really been on the medium-sized shippers and some of the small shippers that may be better served by some of the more niche players. And there are more of those coming up that I think may just mean that there will continue to be a number of choices that you have, at least at the lower and medium levels of the market. I think it might be like Coke and Pepsi. There'll always be Oracle and Blue Yonder at the top of the space. Sorry, SAP, but maybe they'll also be a force to be reckoned with. But
there's always going to be a Dr. Pepper in there on the side too, right? That's independent. So.
I was almost going to use that very analogy, but yeah.
So that's interesting, because the other addition that we've seen in Gartner's newest one, I think, is the introduction of some managed services like C.H. Robinson's TMC, Transplace, and other companies that they're providing software, but they're also providing some other wraparound services. So that's something that I'm thinking 10, 15 years ago was not as common. And it seems, do you see that growing?
I see that. Yeah, I do see that growing. I think Transplace and TMC have been on the Gartner charts for at least 5+ years. And, I think what's true is that they have a more competitive offering compared to some of the pure TMSs. In the early days, some of the capabilities of those tools fell short of particularly in some of the optimization areas and what those companies would do is just be able to have enough people that they could deliver the required results, albeit sometimes with more manual labor, but they had some scale that they could rely on there. I think now the software capabilities that they have are stronger than it used to be.
Yeah, no, that makes sense. So do you have any, can you compare or contrast? Are there any TMSs that you think stand out today? So you mentioned BlueJay, OTM, the Oracle solution, SAP. We talked about Manhattan, Blue Yonder, Mercury Great, and Mitch Wesley's latest one, 3G TMS. How would you, do you group those together? How would you compare and contrast those?
Well, I guess there's a couple different dimensions that you could do that on. Of course, one dimension might just be in terms of volume and predictability. So what I mean by that is, if you have your CPG or retailer and you have high volume freight, maybe relatively predictable from at least at the start of the week, you know what you're likely going to ship for the remainder of the week. And, you have some requirement to do multi-tier cross-docking, pool point type planning. Those kinds of problems, I think, are well-suited to the big guys, to the OEMs and the JDAs. Because once you get it working, it's reliable, kind of works. It's not quite a set it and forget it, but it works well as long as there's not a ton of unpredictability in the freight profile, if you can call it that way. Certainly from the mid, the somewhat smaller players like the Blue Jays and the Mercury Gates, they can do some of those things, but perhaps not at scale. But on the other side, if your processes don't, are maybe going to change, and you need you don't necessarily know at the start of the week all the freight that you're going to be shipping over the next several days, because it's a manufacturing facility, and forecast production and actual production can be different enough that it affects affects things like that. Then that's when the ability to change the workflows and to have some easier customization tends to favor some of the smaller guys. Predictability and scale dimension is one of them. And then other end of the spectrum, it's a there's an argument, or at least a concern, that if you are a medium-sized shipper, or maybe a small to medium-sized shipper, and you have a small number of load planners and maybe one super user,
right,
you need to be a little concerned that all of your talent could walk out the door tomorrow, and you might be struggling to manage your freight. And that's one of the value props for some of the managed services providers too. So I mean, there's just the talent pool is another element, I think, that will that can affect what the quote right TMS
right means. Right. What about the ability to connect some of that dynamic capacity that we talked about, to go outside the traditional waterfall? Do any of these TMSs stand above some of the other ones and make it easier to hack, or easier to institute some of these more dynamic solutions?
Well, I think in terms of the ability to communicate in these sort of dynamic markets, I think all of the medium to large TMSs have acknowledged that they need to be able to provide that capability, because it is becoming a part of the ante to play in the space.
Right, right.
When it comes to spot market capabilities, I think we're maybe having more carrier connections that you could leverage and send out that way. There's a little bit of advantage to some of the companies like BlueJay, especially now with their marriage to E2Open,
right,
where having some carrier connections that you can leverage provides some level of advantage. I mean, the SAP and the Oracle and JDA / Blue Yonder approach is always. I mean, they haven't got as rich a carrier network,
and
onboarding becomes a big deal, and that, I think, can also limit to some degree how you can go off the routing guide, so to speak.
Got it. Well, last question for you, Roy. So what would your recommendation be to someone, a shipper, who's in the market? Whether they're getting rid of an AS400 system they've had, or they're switching from something, if they're coming into TMS, what would you recommend that they do? Besides call you up, of course.
Well, I think okay. So the second best thing to do would be to try to get some clarity around what the pain points are. I think especially from people that aren't transportation people, they think of a TMS as kind of like a black box of functionality that you can buy, and plugging it in will therefore solve all of your problems. And I think the acknowledgement that every TMS has some capabilities that are different, and therefore you shouldn't just go up and kick the tires of a bunch of TMS providers and see who has the better looking demo. Don't get distracted from what you really need to be measuring, and that is, where are the things that you are looking for real help, and make sure that the TMS that you provide is actually going to provide some relief in that area.
Got it. So it's not just maps. It's not just the TMS or maps.
Well, no, maps are important, but you have to have good fonts too.
Usually maps sell. Executives love maps, and the super users turn them off immediately.
And I guess the other thing just to mention is standing up a TMS, because it is an integral part of the whole ecosystem, it doesn't take care of itself. So, I mean, you need to be prepared to invest in the right kind of support, you know, either internal people or a service provider that'll help you out, and you know, recognize that things will continue to change and it will need some attention if it's going to deliver the same value 3 years after implementation as it did the day you flipped the switch.
Got it. Got it. Well, thank you, Roy. I appreciate you spending some time with us today.
Good to be here. Thank you.
All right. Okay, everyone, stay tuned for the Truckload Market Update with Dr. Enam Ayoub.